Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we welcome back returning guest, Dr. Carmen Bolter, to talk about her current documentary research, her trip to Bosnia, the Bosnian pyramids, and much more. But first, I'd like to remind listeners that we're raising money for the station this month, and by keeping the station's program grid intact, along with regular shows and minimal pitching, we need to see your show of support. So please get a pen and write this number down, 212-209-2950. That's the number to dial and pledge your support for WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm asking you to write it down because I won't be asking you every few minutes to dial that number and pledge your support. We're going to continue with the show and trust that you will make a pledge directly to the show in other news. Become a WBAI buddy or pledge for a specific premium offered this week. And you can go to the website, give2wbai.org. I would like to encourage you, if you're a regular listener to In Other News, to become a WBAI buddy. It supports the show and station consistently, and for only $10, $20, or $30 a month, you choose. You'll see the power and the leverage these contributions have. You won't really notice it being taken out of the account, but together, it has a big impact. And remember, listeners, these contributions are tax-deductible. As you've been hearing today during this fun drive, the show is the premium. The individuals who produce and host these radio shows that you've come to enjoy on the station are actually the real value. Please call and pledge your support. Remember, you can give at the $50 level, the $100 level, or the $250 level and beyond. Remember that you've supported the station and this show in the past and participated in the open lines. Let us at WBAI know what this station means to you. Last week, I mentioned Dr. Carmen Bolter's work in the context of following the thread in past shows that discussed telluric energy, ley lines, and megalith builders. Dr. Bolter, as many may know, is the director, producer, and writer of the powerful documentary series called The Pyramid Code. The series has aired in 34 countries and describes how the Great Pyramid served as an energy generator. It was built on intersecting ley lines and constructed with specific materials that are now thought to have harnessed and stored power. The power was created by the interaction of sunlight on water moving through passageways to build a charge using large crystals. This concept is similar to Nikola Tesla's tower design at the Wardenclyffe Tower in Long Island. Dr. Bolter, a former professor at the University of Calgary, is also producing another documentary series titled The New Atlantis, and she's the author of the book Angels and Archetypes, An Evolutionary Map of Feminine Consciousness. Dr. Carmen Bolter, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, hey, we've been talking a lot about Nikola Tesla lately on the show, and in your documentary series, The Pyramid Code, and in past interviews, you made the connection with the Great Pyramid and the Wardenclyffe Tower in Long Island, designed by Nikola Tesla. Can you tell listeners what that connection is?
Well, there are characteristic features of the Great Pyramid. The descending passageways that go down at an angle actually are replicated in the tower, the Tesla Tower. Also, there's a limestone aquifer that's underneath, and there's passageways that are created artificially underneath the Great Pyramid. But the connection to water, to the aquifer itself, to the angles of the passageways underneath the tower are allowing the Tesla Tower to replicate the energy transformation of the Great Pyramid. And so it had to do with the transmutation of the atom. And in the sense of the pyramid, it was separating the hydrogen and the oxygen molecules out of the water. And that was part of what was allowing the wireless technology, both in Egypt and in Tesla's invention.
It's just incredible. Are there other pyramids besides the Great Pyramid with that structure underneath them?
Absolutely, and it's a characteristic feature for a working pyramid. So the Bosnian pyramid, which has largely been blacked out from mainstream news, has these passageways, has a system of tunnels underneath it, and has a source of water underneath. And so the construction, the materials that it's constructed out of, the shape, the location on the telluric ley lines, and is all producing an energy field that emanates straight off the top of the Bosnian pyramid. And the characteristic features are surprisingly similar.
You know, I'm really looking forward to the next documentary, The New Atlantis, that you're working on. Can you give listeners an idea about what you're finding in your research and travels as you continue to put this series together? And why did you go to Bosnia?
Well, I was giving results of a study that I did called The Effects of the Great Pyramid on the Human Aura and the Chakra System. And I was invited by Dr. Sam Osmanagic, who is heading up all the archaeological research at the Bosnian Pyramids. And the reason that I started doing the New Atlantis in the first place was I was giving results of a study that I had done in 2010, on October 2010, mm-hmm. in Russia. And I was approached by Valery Uvarov, who some of your listeners may be aware of, and he's been doing a lot of study on ancient texts from Atlantis. And he actually deciphered a way to harness pyramid energy. And so he has is in the process of building a complex in the center of the continent of Russia. And he has built a functioning new pyramid. Now, he's been working on this sort of pyramid energy for a number of years. But this pyramid is made largely out of quartz. And he followed the records that were laid down from prophecies in Atlantis. So apparently in Atlantis, they knew that there was going to be a third catastrophe. There had already been two. And they found a way to predict when there was going to be some kind of an asteroid hit. And so the prophecy said when the head of the crab hits the heart of the lion, which basically is referring to astrological ages, but they don't usually move, so it meant that there would have had to have been a very big impact on the planet. And what actually happened was the planet's axis was knocked over by 14 degrees, and then everything had to be reset, and it changed the length of the year from 360 days to 365. And so they were actually able to pinpoint the exact day when that was going to happen and did happen. So the ceiling of the Temple of Dendera that's referred to as the round zodiac actually is a misnomer. It's actually the calendar of catastrophes, which outlines the exact date of the world flood, which is what pulled down Atlantis. And so we're taught that Atlantis is, you know, mythology and it never really happened and we've got no proof of it, but there is proof of it and there's documentation in more than one ancient text about it.
you have photographs on your website. Can you tell listeners what that web address is so maybe they can take a look as we're talking about it?
Okay, so it's pyramidcode.com/PHOTOS.html. Or you can just go to Pyramid Code and click on the tab that says photos.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually there is a photo gallery that has the new Russian pyramid and Valery Uvarov's name. And you'll see this very, very big quartz crystal that's taller than a person. You can actually count the number of faces on the top of the pyramid. And on the top of the piece of quartz, and that's underneath. So the mechanism through which they built this pyramid is actually shown, because these are pictures of the construction of the pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge crystal ball that's inside it that's 42 centimeters, 108 kilograms. And basically, he's using the quartz. It's a spiral core to quartz under pressure, and that's what gives the pyramid. It's the real pyramid energy, and so people are having spontaneous healings in there. And the casing stones are actually crushed quartz in a polymer. But there's actually this mechanism. I don't think there's a picture of this part, but I did see the actual molds themselves, which are like the arms of the galaxy. and it was 4 inches of black, 4 inches of white, and it's crushed quartz. And this double helix of quartz under pressure is what gives the pyramid energy, as well as the straight sides of the pyramid. And so that's the first photo gallery. And the second one and the third one are showing the actual results of the Great Pyramid study. One of them was done in 2010, and you can see the alignment of the chakras. So my hypothesis, what I was really looking to investigate, was if there was some way that being inside the Great Pyramid could lead to increased psychicness, because what I was noticing over the years was that the more time that I spent in the pyramid, the more psychic I became.
Oh, geez.
So I wondered if there was a way to measure that, and I knew that it took a little while to synthesize.
Right.
Instant, you know, you come out of the pyramid and all of a sudden you know things.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a device, and it was invented by Dr. Konstantin Korotkov, mm-hmm. who was hosting the conference that I gave the paper at.
Oh, really?
In St. Petersburg, and there were psychiatrists and medical doctors. It's actually a diagnostic tool for the Russian Medical Federation. And anyway, so what it does is it's electrophotonic imaging, which would be souped up Carillion photography, like with higher definition, and it's gaseous discharge visualization. So if you're looking up the device, it would be GDV/EPI, and what it's actually doing is it's taking a photographic plate, and the machine itself is a camera. And you put your fingertips with darkness surrounding it, and it sends up a little flash of energy, and then it photographs the photonic emissions coming off the fingertips. And then it logarithmically assigns it to the alignment and the energetic value of the chakras and the energetic field. And so what I was looking for was correlations, because I had a large sample of people. And when you look at individuals and their results, it wasn't as powerful as in quantitative research when you can take a large group of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a reading before people went in the pyramid, and I took one after they had been in the sarcophagus for 2 minutes, and then an after post-test. And then I replicated the same study in 2012, and I added a delayed post-test. So basically, in the Pyramid Code, Hakim, the indigenous wisdom keeper, talks about 360 senses instead of 5. And so I made the graphic that has a priestess standing inside a sphere. And the idea was where each of the crosses happened, the crosshairs on the sphere, would be like an additional sense. So synesthesia is hearing a picture or seeing music. So it's a cross-sensory perception. So I was surmising that if the chakras started to integrate with one another, that would give more senses. And so what we see, even more pronounced in the 12-12 study,
mm-hmm.
is the full entrainment of the chakras. And so everything's informing everything else. So before, there was a certain amount of that. And in the inside the pyramid, there was more. But when it really happened was after they came out, when there was a synthesis. So every single chakra is feeding back and forth like a serpentine, and that's what you can see on the pictures.
Dr. Bolter, are you implying that the alignment of chakras has some connection to psychic ability?
No, the entrainment of the chakras, the communication between them. So just like you get the hair raised on your arm or a gut reaction,
mm-hmm.
If your heart is informing your third eye, is informing your root chakra, and everything is talking to everything else, it increases the ability of being able to have extrasensory perception.
Jeez. So 360 senses.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And so what I suspected with the delayed post-test was incorrect. It didn't show up. In this group, 3 days after we were in the pyramid, they did not maintain the energy. Now, one of the things that happened, if you looked at the individuals, with the chakras sort of looked like they were blowing apart. But when we think about the activities of out-of-body experiences that the initiates did inside the sarcophagus, literally they were leaving their bodies. And the body would appear completely still. And in the text, they called the still body the deceased. And that's where they started to continue to mistranslate and say that the pyramid was a tomb. But we know that if somebody has an out-of-body experience, their body appears dormant and they're not breathing very deeply, but they're not dead. And so that's part of what happened in terms of them later, because the patriarchal time frame of ancient Egypt is the dynastic period. So everything was before that was matriarchal and much more spiritual and much more in keeping with these secret abilities. Okay?
Mm-hmm. So these GDV tests and studies that you have done, this is going to be in the documentary that's coming up?
Yes, we're going to be using the device to measure the effectiveness and the actual energy fields in the new pyramid. So, you know, the episode starts us out in ancient Atlantis, and then it comes forward with the true source of the pyramid energy, and it brings us in the time frame all the way back 50,000 years ago into present time. And so this project is actually called the New Atlantis. It's got a second name called Project 12, and it's a replica of Atlantis as Plato described it, with a big pyramid in the middle, which is already built, and four pyramids around the outside of that, and four more around that, with canals joining them. And then there's various buildings, and they're housing new ways of doing agriculture, health, paradigm shift in education, technology, new devices for free energy, all that sort of thing. And this research is being conducted in Russia, and these new prototypes are being developed at this site called the New Atlantis. And the pyramid is functioning, and there was even, before they put the capstone and the casing stones on the pyramid, one of the construction workers actually had a spontaneous healing. He had a very bad case of asthma, and he started to tremble, part of his body started to sweat, and next thing you know, he was completely cured by being in this pyramid. So there's a number of studies that have been done and more to be done, including the effect that having a functioning pyramid in the vicinity of where school children are and seeing how it affects them and their learning.
And this is so incredible. We briefly talked about it in the past interview, but it's just to hear you describe you know, what's happening over there in Russia and Bosnia is just amazing. And you know, on this show, we often talk about the harmful effects from microwave radiation via cell towers or cell phones on humans, and also the hive mind thinking that can result from social media, prescription and non-prescription drug use. And then when these things begin to multiply and have an effect on basic human cognition and communication, it affects our thinking. And are you seeing evidence of that in your personal interactions as a PhD and a professor?
Well, one of the things that I've been all along is a geek, and so I lined up for the first router 15 years ago, and I was doing a tremendous amount of traveling. I took 48 flights in 13 months, and so I got very concerned about the effects of radiation, and I actually was hospitalized and put on morphine for the beginnings of radiation toxicity. And then I had my house tested, and I realized that there was a real serious problem with the Wi-Fi and any wireless device, Bluetooth, wireless doorbell, wireless telephone, a cordless phone. And so I shut all that off, and I had a lot of symptoms that completely disappeared instantly. Headaches, blurry vision, cramps, problems with focus, and inability to sleep, disturbed dreams, tension in my adrenal glands, and that all disappeared. And so I've really started to note it, and also stopped using my microwave. And of course, microwaves are illegal in Russia, and some people think they haven't caught up and got them yet. They're so backwards, but no, they're so advanced that they don't allow them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, and so many people, since I've discovered this for myself, are telling me about friends they have that have gone to the doctor that have these symptoms, blurry vision, headaches, they can't get rid of them, nausea. And it could well be because the whole world is becoming so permeated with Wi-Fi now that it really is affecting people, but nobody, the doctors certainly don't understand. Now, in the tunnel system underneath the Bosnian pyramids, I went in there, and it's a completely free zone. It doesn't have, because it's a stone structure, and the tunnels themselves are made of stone, and they're underneath the pyramid, this is a zone where I don't hear ringing in my ears. I felt very, very well down there, and apparently the effects last for 2 months. And it's just like this completely, it's a zone that's completely free of all these toxic influences. And it's just, they've measured it, and they've got 14,000 times the radiation, negative ions in there that they do ordinarily. They're filming and photographing plasma beings that are orbs when they're still, but they're actually moving. And as soon as I stepped out of the tunnels, the ringing in my ears came back, and there's only two other places that I didn't have ringing in my ears in the last number of years, and that was in the Amazon jungle, 100 miles away from electricity, and on the western desert in Egypt, where we were too far away from cell phone towers to get a signal, and I had no ringing in my ears. And so most people aren't that sensitive, but if you have no way to compare, if you have no place to go where there's no Wi-Fi signals and the EMFs are low, the electromagnetic frequencies are low, if you've got no place to go, then you can't compare it. And so I will not I mean, if you have a hardwired computer, it's not dangerous. So now I'm talking to you on a hardwired telephone tied to the wall, and my internet's coming to me hardwired, and I don't have Wi-Fi in my house, and I don't have any wireless devices anymore.
Yeah, I mean, this is great advice. We often discuss this issue here on the show, and we're coming up with the same thing again and again. On another note, Dr. Ross Hamilton, author of Star Mounds, had been a guest on the show and on First Voices, another show on the station, and he talked about the pre-American civilizations and giants. And can you tell us what evidence you've found of giant people and what parts of the world were they uncovered?
Well, one thing, we have to be very cautious because there's a lot of disinformation in alternative media. And there are lots of photoshopped pictures that show people standing up and they're not even as high as the head laying down of the giant. So those are fake pictures. Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, you know, meant, to, I suppose, to cross-wire us so we can't figure certain things out. But I discovered a long time ago in Egypt, in, at the site of Saqqara, I was spending a long time there by myself, going there off, you know, I lived in Egypt and I'd go there almost every day, and I went off the beaten path onto the other side that tourists don't usually go, and one of the guards dangled his keys and said, come with me, I'll show you something. And there was a stone sarcophagus down this ladder for a 22-foot being. If you go into the museum, they're maybe up to 18 feet. Mm. And if you can see ones that are the size of children, ones that are shorter than we are, the sarcophagus that you can see that you could put a mummified body in there, that are various heights. And so from 4 feet to 5 feet to 6 feet to 12 to 14 to 18 feet, and then buried under the ground or in a chamber under the ground up to 22 feet. And then in the Serapeum, also at Saqqara, there are huge stone sarcophagi in there that they say were for bulls. And it's just impossible. They're not the right shape for a bull. Maybe somebody came along later and put bulls in there, but that's not what they're for. They were, I think, and I've had confirmation of this through channeled readings and through, you know, double-blind studies of what participants in my tours have reported, though I already had this information myself without telling them, was that they were teleportation chambers. There was a way that the body could be put into some kind of a homeostasis in these stone underground chambers. And these sarcophagi are so big that they are 20 tons, the bottoms of them, and the lids are 5 tons, and they can't even move them. They tried to move one out, and it got stuck in the hall, and it's still there. And so these are absolutely incredible engineering because of the precision of the way they're made, and I'm sure that and the construction of what they're made of. They're granite.
Oh, granite?
Sure,
okay.
They have something to do, because granite is a transmission stone that emits radon gas, and I'm sure that, and there was a liquid substance in there, silvery, kind of looks like mercury, but I don't know if that's what it was. So there's, you know, the evidence is there, and of course the Department of Antiquities, you know, especially under the leadership of Zahi Hawass, was all about, you know, trying to stop people from figuring anything out, but the thing is the information has come to us. But also there are a number of different finds in South America of giants, and there are some that have been found that have not been unearthed yet. And so I won't say where, but we know that there are three, they're waiting to be excavated, and then we'll hopefully be able to film that as it's happening.
Wow.
And the estimate through Klaus Dana is that they could be as old as 250,000 years old. Now, if you use carbon dating, you're going to find that everything looks a lot younger, and there is some kind of a mandate that nothing in Peru and South America is supposed to be older than 6,000 years old. And so there are new dating techniques that are superior to carbon-14 that are very expensive. One of them is thermoluminescent dating, and it can go back into the hundreds of thousands of years and give a precise date if there's organic material, and they can actually date bone. But I will tell you, even with carbon-14 dating, they found some organic material between the third and the fourth course of poured stones in the Bosnian pyramids, and there's a huge excavation going on there because these pyramids have been covered with, you know, tens of thousands of years of debris and several world floods. But even in the most conservative estimates, using carbon-14 dating, which is notoriously incorrect and makes things look younger after 30,000 years, these dates are coming back from the labs, and I've seen the certificates with my own eyes at 38,000 years old.
I think we have a time for another question before we go to open the lines. Now, Dr. Bolter, can you talk about the contradictions in the history books and what you're finding in your research and, of course, presenting in these amazing documentaries?
Well, it seems that education, government, everything wants us to think that we are biblically 6,000 years old. It's the Bible, the Quran, they all want to lessen the time frame. And so what this does is it prevents us from being able to open our minds to a whole array of dates and what could have been going on the planet for a long time. But what's happening with science is that if they find something that doesn't fit the timeline, and I've been in scientific board meetings, roundtable discussions with scientists from a number of different disciplines, and they will tell you that if something doesn't fit the timeline, they put it back in the ground. And the Smithsonian has been known to gather artifacts that are out of place and older and put them on a ship and dump them in the ocean. And so the evidence has been suppressed, and the dating has been erroneous. And the information is coming, but it's very difficult to, first of all, afford to get the thermoluminescent dating done. It can take over a year because the labs are, they've got too many things to do, and so they can't get it all done. So it's very expensive. It takes a really long time. But the scientists are actually changing the dates to make things look like they're not as old as they are. So we really have to be developing our sense of deep knowing and not be following this pattern. And so there's pyramids coming up all over. They're very, very old indeed. There's artifacts that are being found that are clearly from very ancient matriarchal cultures. There's a common writing that's showing up all over the world, and Klaus Dana has photographs of a number of these artifacts that he leaves in situ, but he does photograph. And this writing was found in the Bosnian pyramids, including these little stone effigies that demonstrate that a left-handed culture, because if you put them in your right hand, they don't fit. If you put them in your left hand, they do. And one of the things that I saw when I was in Bosnia was a piece of young bear bone that had holes drilled into it, and a number of musicians tried to play it, and they couldn't get anything out of it. And the first trombone of the Bosnian Symphony Orchestra decided to put it in his left hand, and he was able to play four octaves on it, and I heard him play and recorded him and filmed him playing where there are these large stone spheres in Bosnia. And so this bone was from 60,000 years ago, which puts us into Cro-Magnon man, but what this is saying is that they were not cavemen, primitive. They had an artistic culture. They had a sophisticated culture that honored music. So this kind of shatters what we've been taught.
Our guest is Dr. Carmen Bolter, former professor at the University of Calgary, director, producer, and writer of the powerful documentary series called The Pyramid Code. We're going to open up the phone lines to take your comments and questions. Call us at 212-209-2900, and we'll be right back after this break. And our guest is Dr. Carmen Bolter, and we're taking your phone calls. Listeners, if you have a question or comment for our guest, call us at 212-209-2900. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, good evening. Excellent show. I guess I have a bit of a three-parter, and I'll listen over the air. First, I'd like her to give us her hopeful outrage in terms of radiation and the inventions at the airport that should be in the worst inventions and craziest inventions in terms of those scanners and ionizing radiation machines. And since she mentioned she travels so much, her outrage around TSA, which should have given us a heads up on NSA. I'd like her to speak more, elaborate more or the pyramid prophecies, if her research has gotten into that work. And I do have the correct spelling of her name, but, Jeff, you might want to make sure that we can understand her name. I'd also like her to speak about Chris Dunn did a lot of initial work around the pyramids in Giza, being the Great Pyramid, being an energy system or a power system. And also, if she's familiar with Steve Quayle's work, because Quayle, because many years ago, through Coast to Coast, he was someone who was talking about the giants. And I'll listen, if she's gotten my questions, I'll listen over the air. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, caller. Carmen, did you get those? Okay.
I got all those. Okay, first of all, you spell my name Boulter. Secondly, when Steve Quayle was talking on Coast to Coast, he was referring to that lady, and that was me. And so he heard me talking about the giant sarcophagus at Saqqara, but he couldn't remember my name.
Oh, interesting.
So I haven't heard of anybody else who's seen that, and now if you go there, I could show you exactly where it is, but it's definitely under lock and key.
Mm.
And and then the hopeful outrage, well, I really avoided the scanners as much as I could, and I only went through them twice, and I ended up in the hospital with signs of radiation poisoning. So that's not funny, and I decided to stop traveling as much. And then my friends who had equipment to test radiation said, well, let's test your house. And that's when I learned that the Wi-Fi was really affecting me. So, yes, it's very nefarious. The other thing that I know about airports, and this is from my friends who are pilots from commercial airlines, the people who put the food and the fuel into planes aren't tested at all. They're not screened at all. And they're left alone on the planes for, you know, several minutes at a time. And so I really think that it's a show just to get people to feel uncomfortable about traveling so we won't, you know, get the secrets. And so certainly in terms of Egypt, I mean, they're still going on and on about the this and that in the streets. And John Anthony West, who is a prolific author, and he's taken groups to Egypt over a long period of time, and he was part of the redating of the Sphinx material. He's there now, and he's just written to say, you know, that everything's really peaceful and there's hardly anybody in Egypt. And once people catch on that it's fine over there, that there may be a tsunami of people, and so now is actually a good time to go. But everybody who's interested in coming to Egypt usually has somebody in their family who says, no, no, don't go. But I've been dealing with that since 1977 when I first went over to Egypt, and they've been saying it's dangerous for that long. But I think that's because it's got best-kept secrets. And the last time I was there, I was with a group of 80 people. I brought them for the December 21st, 2012 time, and we were the only plane on the tarmac going down to Luxor. We were the only buses. We were two buses in the parking lot of Saqqara. I mean, we were the only foreigners in the museum, and this was, you know, a long time before more what they call uprisings, but the people that I know on the ground in Egypt are fine. They're just fine. Hmm. Chris Dunn, I know him well. I've spoken with him at conferences. His work, the beauty of his work is that he doesn't have an agenda, and he's an engineer. So he brought some engineering tools with him to measure the flatness of the sides of things and machine tool marks, and he's done some work in the Serapeum that I mentioned in the earlier segment. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have an agenda that says that it's this or that or it's aliens or who built the pyramids. He's just an engineer looking at the sophistication of the workmanship of the ancient Egyptians. And one of the things that he's noticed is that the equanimity of the faces on the statues, that Ramses seems to want them all to be him, and probably Amenhotep III, Akhenaten's father in the 18th dynasty, probably built them. But they aren't, I don't think they're necessarily of people, just the way a hieroglyph, a cartouche, isn't the name of a person as much as it's the role of a person. So we have been looking at Egypt through patriarchal lenses of our own ways of being and thinking, and therefore we've been unable to see what the ancients were really about, which is what the Pyramid Code was designed to break through.
And it's just a wonderful documentary series, and we really appreciate you sharing that information with us and the listeners. We're going to go to another call.
Professor, I have a question. Are you familiar with the philosopher sage George Gurdjieff?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
Are you familiar with the quote from the book called Beings with Remarkable Men about coming into possession of a map of what they defined as pre-sand Egypt?
Not specifically. I've gone over these texts a number of times, but there are definitely, there's a map where the Giza Plateau is right now, and it's a unified field, and I'm pretty convinced that there were other buildings there before the pyramids were built that kept the position of the location of the pyramids exact.
There's other writings of one of his students, Peter Ostensky, saying about how Egypt goes back tens of thousands of years before we ever, like, you know, our dating's way out of line, if you will. And this is these are people speaking like in the 1920s.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Ostensky. And the other thing is that the history of Egypt comes from Herodotus, the Greek that came, and he, you know, ran into a boy in the village, and the boy told him stories, and he went, and they wrote that in the history books, and, you know, there's no real verification of it. But Gurdjieff was very wise in terms of, you know, a lot of the material that he spoke of, and Ostensky as well. And so I'm really familiar with their work. And, yes, Hakim, who's the indigenous wisdom keeper in the Pyramid Code, you know, he doesn't want it to be less than 52,000 years old. And when you think about the Bosnian pyramid being conservatively dated at 38,000, I think that they've got a point, and we're talking about the precession of the equinoxes and the 26,000-year cycle. So even if the pyramids align with something from 10,800 BC, you could add 26,000 years to that and 26,000 years to that, or half a precessional cycle, 13,000 years, and arrive at these older dates. Now, it's been my observation that the more a researcher is tied to a university academic environment, the younger they want things to be. And so there's a lot of pressure to follow along with what they say. And I was going to do my PhD in Egyptology in the Faculty of Archaeology, and I realized when I did, after 1 year, that I wasn't going to be able to change the theoretical perspective to give an opinion that was other than what they tell us we're supposed to think.
Wow.
And that's why I decided to do the PhD in linguistics and then do my research on my own.
What you're speaking about, the reluctance to update things, I remember I lived in Europe back in the 90s, and they had these incredible finds in Bulgaria that clearly went back along the Black Sea. They went back 10 and 12,000 years of a very advanced culture, if you will. Mm-hmm. And somebody joked, well, if we put this into the databases, we'll have to rewrite some of our textbooks, and that'll take too much time.
Well, sure, but we don't have to write the text. But most textbooks have got at least 20-year-old information, and look how much we've learned in 20 years.
Right.
But there's
right.
pyramids being found in Serbia. This is a unified field. And the things that the artifacts that they're finding that are in the lab in the Bosnian in Sarajevo near the Bosnian pyramids, they look like what Michael Tillinger has found in South Africa. I've seen them with my own eyes. And so when you get a number of researchers together, like we had Klaus Donner and a number of other people at the Hidden Mysteries Conference last September, I saw them too. Yeah, they look exactly the same. Like if you looked at the footage of these two labs, you'd think you're in the same place. Well, South Africa's not in the neighborhood of Bosnia, by the way. And Maria Gamutis found a lot of material of the goddess-centered culture, the left-handed culture that had the little dolls that they would put in their hands, stone. And all of this fits together. So the research that I did for my book, Angels and Archetypes, an Evolutionary Map of Feminine Consciousness, is meeting the pyramid power and the underground stone age. But it's very sophisticated. So, we're in the age of plastic right now, and we think that, things made out of stone are primitive or not useful, but large stone structures on telluric currents, on ley lines, are very effective and timeless. And so, we really haven't been looking at it properly.
I know that my father, during the Second World War in the American Air Force, got a chance to see the pyramids up close. He took a lot of pictures of them. And he wasn't really a believer in a lot of these things, but he said to me, obviously, whoever built that knew a heck of a lot more than that, then we'll know for a couple centuries. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Thank you so much, Jeff, for a great program, as always.
Thank you,
Professor.
Thank you.
Thank you for that great call and questions and everything. We got another call on the line.
Doctor, did I hear you right? Were there really people 22 feet tall?
Yep. 22, 25 feet tall.
Well, they must have had some 14. Appetite then.
Yeah.
In other words, what kind of farms could they have had, food they raised,
Well, I never really thought about what they ate. But the thing is where would they stand, and why are the temples so tall? And, it really does make sense if they were larger beings that they would be able to handle the stone differently than we can as well. Right now, we don't even have the technology to take the pyramids down, and believe me, they would have taken them down if they could have. They've even exposed them to dynamite, and they can't take them down.
Yeah.
So,
they didn't expose them to dynamite.
Yes, they did. They dynamited the Great Pyramid.
They actually did that, yeah.
They actually tried to use dynamite on the Great Pyramid, and they broke it, but they... And there's been other explosions in there that I think are more of a chemical reaction inside, because there's weird chemical marks inside
well,
of the pyramids.
I like to say that Tesla probably, in other words, he came from Yugoslavia, was mm-hmm. he came from the Eastern Europe, and he probably knew all about these technologies, or he had knowledge of them.
Yes, and perhaps the earth, there's a lot of earth covering the Bosnian pyramid and the Serbian pyramid, and then trees have grown on it, so they don't look exactly straight-sided because of the height of the trees. being variable. And they were right there in his backyard. Whether they were discovered or not, he was definitely working with this energy. And the former Yugoslavia is now Bosnia, Serbia, Croatia, and these various countries that have been broken apart. So, yes, he was right there. He was right there.
Thank you, Tom, for those great questions. And it is amazing, Dr. Bolter, that now we know that these giants beings did exist. And for a long time, I didn't really know for certain because of all the disinformation, but I'm glad you're here to confirm that. We have another phone call. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, my name's Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. I've seen like a couple of different shows that basically dealt with UFOs and the pyramids. They're pretty convincing as far as like the shows make it say that they go into this big explanation about how it would be impossible for man, you know, to build these pyramids without sophisticated machinery. And then they go into these explanations and they show the type of machinery and the highly advanced civilization that would have to build these pyramids. And I've always thought, you know, like, well, it sounds pretty convincing to me. I mean, you know, they also linked it to the what are you saying? You don't think it's like that this is like kind of like a proof of some kind of alien, you know, I don't know, intervention? I mean, to me, that's what I honestly believe that. That's my pretty much of it. And I follow a lot of the UFO stuff. But I didn't get whether you thought that or you thought, like, man, it was, like, able to move things through psychic powers. I really didn't get, like, where you were coming from on the pyramid being built. And I just would like you to comment on what I'm saying about the UFO intervention.
Okay, well, I'm guessing that you're referring to the show Ancient Aliens and viruses and everything that's ever happened was because of aliens, and I think that's a little bit simplistic, and, you know, they use stills. They haven't done a lot of, you know, real footage and gone to real places, and I think that you can just load everything in and say UFOs did it. However, somebody still had to be on the ground. Now, I will agree that there's really sophisticated technology, and perhaps we've been influenced by beings from other places, much like people channel now. And, you know, they may be getting somebody from Orion or from Sirius. I don't think we'll ever know, you know, the whole truth about these other planetary places. I have, you know, been tracking the idea of UFOs since I was a little girl. And but the thing, and Hakim would say, you know, even if there were aliens, someone on the ground could still have had that sophisticated knowledge. And what we don't hold into account is that we could have been far more sophisticated technologically as humans, and we have the DNA for 360 senses. We have everything it takes to be able to do what's called the SIDHIS, S-I-D-H-I-S, which is teleportation, levitation, it's all the transmutation of the atoms, so manifestation, alchemy, bilocation, and teleportation. So once a high-level initiate was trained in a certain way, they would get these superpowers. And I think that it's too easy to attribute that it's something outside of our sphere that we can't touch. I mean, it's attractive, and I think, you know, that the show, you know, I've got 57 episodes of it recorded on my PVR, and so, I mean, I know that they can go on and talk about it, but I think it's a way of giving away our power. Like, we ourselves have everything it takes, have the DNA. It's just dormant. And we know that if we don't use a muscle, it's not useful to us if we're exercising it. So I think that sophisticated high-level initiates that could have had interaction with high-level beings that perhaps came from other planets are possible. And in the New Atlantis, we talk about the third-party hypothesis. So a lot of people wonder why the Mayans and the Babylonians and the Sumerians and the Egyptians and the ancient Indians and groups around the planet all would talk about similar things, you know, perhaps, you know, other planets and spaceships and that sort of thing. But we can't figure out how that could happen and if they were talking to each other. But they all could have been talking to the same third party. So possibly the Atlanteans, you know, had communication with otherworldly beings. And certainly in Egypt, they refer to that all the time. And if you look at the frescoes, you'll see all kinds of evidence of connection with other beings. And we're the ones that have made that strange, that have made that, if you can't see it, it's not there. So I think that, you know, connection with higher level beings is normal. But that doesn't mean that they built the pyramids and we just stood there.
Great answer, Dr. Bolter. We're going to go to another phone call. Thank you, caller, for that call. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
I wanted to say thanks for the great program. I really appreciate this. Dr. Bolter, I remember seeing magazine ads during the 60s and 70s that would advertise pyramid kits that would do everything from sharpen your razor blades to increase the longevity of a houseplant. And my question is, are you aware, is there any legitimate technology for harnessing the healing power of the pyramids, perhaps to use in one's home for augmenting the health of both humans and pets?
Absolutely. And I would point back to Valerie Uvaroff, who has been working with this pyramid energy for decades. And I've been to his home, and he's got pyramids for everything. So big and small, and depending on the actual purpose, and they have to be constructed correctly. You can, you can't just, you know, have a misaligned, disproportional pyramid. But yes, they can sharpen razor blades. And I'll tell you, one example is that in the olden days when we had Walkmans, my batteries used to last me, two AA batteries would last 12 hours, and I would put the dead batteries into the pockets of my jacket, and then I'd go into the Great Pyramid, I'd come out, and I could use them for six more hours.
Wow.
Just by having them passively in my pocket and going into the
pyramid. That's amazing. So is there a source that I could look to?
Like I said, Valerie Uvaroff, U-V-A-R-O-V, and he's got a book called The Pyramids. And, yeah, he's one that has done multiple experiments on it to the point where he has built a number of large pyramids, not nearly as functional and efficient as this new one in Russia that was completed in 2012. But he has all the information in his books.
Thank you, caller. Wonderful questions. And we have just a few more minutes and two calls, and maybe we can fit this in. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, in terms of the quote-unquote giant idea, if we look at the people of East Africa, the Dinka, the Nuer, the Nuba, people regularly average 6'8", 7'7", 2". Even some of them are in the NBA playing ball, like Manu Ball and so forth. As well as, is the author familiar with the book of the New Era, where they document with picture and British confirmation because they blew up pyramids that were built in the quote-unquote Anglo-Egyptian Sudan around 1928, 1930. The book has pictures of them, as well as the construction of them and dedicated to certain quote-unquote chiefs and so forth.
There are very definitely pyramids in the Sudan, many of them.
I'm talking
they tend to be a little steeper sides
I'm talking about within the last 100 years, quote-unquote, the last 80 to 90 years.
That they would have destroyed them. I would suggest they're older than that.
The book is called The Book of the New Era. They had pictures as well as documentation there.
Yep. I'm familiar with that.
Thank you very much for that comment. We're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
I'm trying to understand what Dr. Bolter is trying to debunk when she talks about Cro-Magnon cavemen. Who have been understood to be a rather sophisticated hunting culture, the Magdalenians, since the discovery of Lascaux, Altamira, and all of the other caves containing phenomenal art,
okay.
Which have been dated back to at least 35,000 BC. So I don't understand what revelation she thinks she's making.
Great. Good question, caller. We're running out of time. Carmen, can you
Well, we haven't seen musical instruments that, I mean, I haven't been able to hold and look at a musical instrument from them. And in school, they still want to tell us that they are cavemen. And I think that they were far more sophisticated. And yes, they had art in the caves, of course. And if you don't think it's news, good. But I don't know that anybody has seen this musical instrument.
Dr. Bolter, I want to thank you for being on the show. And if we didn't get time to talk about your new website, interactiveu.com, can you tell listeners what that is?
It's interactive-theletteru.com, and it's an online learning and social action network that's just launching, actually, in the next few days. There's 9 faculties, 31 courses, 10 certificate programs, and it's a new paradigm in education. I think the education system has damaged us all. I've been an educator for a number of years, and it's all multimedia, cross-disciplinary, culturally inclusive, constructivist, and it teaches people to make film, write books, do things, make things for themselves, be creative, and interact with material, with collaborative work, and contribute to society. So I'm pretty excited about it.
And it's ready to go now or pretty soon?
It's open right now,
The
register, you could register. We're putting a few finishing touches on it, but it's pretty much ready to go.
Interactive-theletteru.com.
Yep.
Wonderful. Dr. Bolter, director, writer, producer of The Pyramid Code, thank you so much for being on In Other News.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay. Have a great evening.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's going to do it for the show. Listeners, please pledge your support for this wonderful station that can bring this material to you. See you Monday, 10 p.m.